page 289. All that is realized is what the spotlight falls on, striking melodic intervals, unsettling modulations, intentional or unintentional mistakes, or whatever condenses itself into a formula by an especially intimate merging of melody and text. Here two listeners and products fit together. They are not even offered the structure which they cannot follow. If atomized, listening means progressive decomposition for the higher music. There is nothing more to decompose in the lower music. The forms of hit songs are so strictly standardized, down to the number of beats and the exact duration, that no specific forms appears in any particular piece. The emancipation of the parts from their cohesion and from all moments which extend beyond their immediate present introduces the diversion of musical interest to the particular sensory pleasure. Typically, the listener show a preference not merely for particular showpieces, for instrumental acrobatics, but for the individual instrumental colors as such. This preference is promoted by the practice of American popular music, whereby each variation or chorus is played with emphasis on a special instrumental color. With the clarinet, the piano, or the trumpet as quasi-soloist, this often goes so far that the listener seems to care more about treatment and style than about the otherwise indifferent material. But with the treatment validating itself only in particular enticing effects, along with the attraction of color as such, there is, of course, the veneration for the tool and the drive to imitate and join in the game, possibly also something of the great delight of children in bright colors, which returns under the pressure of contemporary musical experience. The diversion of interests from the whole, perhaps indeed from the melody, to the charm of color and to the individual trick, could be optimistically interpreted as a new rupture of the disciplining function. But this interpretation would be erroneous once the perceived charms remain unopposed in a rigid format. Whoever yields to them will eventually rebel against it. But then they are themselves of the most limited kind. They all center on an impressionistically softened tonality. It cannot be said that interest in the isolated color or the isolated sonority awakens a taste for new colors and new sonorities. Rather, the atomistic listener are the first to denounce such sonorities as intellectual or absolutely dissonant. The charms which they enjoy must be of an approved type. To be sure, dissonances occur in jazz practice, and even techniques of intentional misplaying have developed. But an appearance of harmlessness accompanies all these customs. Every extravagant sonority must be so produced that the listener can recognize it as a substitute for a normal one. While he rejoices in the mistreatment the dissonance gives to the consonants whose place it takes, the virtual consonance simultaneously guarantees that one remains within the circle. Page 290. In tests on the reception of hit songs, people have been found to ask how they should act if a passage simultaneously pleases and displeases them. One may well suspect that they report an experience which also occurs to those who give no account of it. The reactions to isolated charms are ambivalent. A sensory pleasure turns into disgust as soon as it is seen how it only still serves to betray the consumer. The betrayal here consists in always offering the same thing. Even the most insensitive hit song enthusiast cannot always escape the feeling that the child with a sweet tooth comes to know in the candy store. If the charms wear off and turns into their opposite, the short life of most hit songs belong into the same range of experience. Then the cultural ideology which closes the upper-level musical business finishes things off by causing the lower to be hurt as with a bad conscience. Nobody believes so completely in prescribed pleasures. But the listening nevertheless remain regressive in assenting to this situation despite all distrust and all ambivalence. As a result of the displacement of feelings into exchange value, no demands are really advanced in music anymore. Substitutes satisfy their purpose as well because the demand to which they adjust themselves has itself already been substituted. But ears which are still only able to hear what one demands of them in what is offered and which registers the abstract charm instead of synthesizing the moments of charm are bad ears. Even in the isolated phenomenon, key aspects will escape them. That is, those which transcend its own isolation. There is actually a neurotic mechanism of stupidity in listening to the arrogantly ignorant rejection of everything unfamiliar is its sure sign. Regressive listeners behave like children. Again and again, and with stubborn malice, they demand the one dish they have once been served. A sort of musical children's language is prepared for them. It differs from the real thing in that its vocabulary consists exclusively of fragments and distortions of the artistic language of music. In the piano scores of hit songs, there are strange diagrams. They relate to guitar, ukulele, and banjo, as well as the accordion. Infantile instruments in comparison with the piano, and are intended for players who cannot read the notes. They depict graphically the fingering of the chords of the plucking instruments. The rationally, comprehensibly notes are replaced by visual directives, to some extent by musical traffic signals. These signs, of course, confine themselves to the three tonic major chords and exclude any meaningful harmonic progressions. Page 291. The regulated musical traffic is worthy of them. It cannot be compared with that in the streets. It swarms with mistakes in phrasing and harmony. There are wrong pitches, incorrect doubling of thirds, fifth and octave progressions, and all sorts of illogical treatments of voices, sometimes in the bass. One could like to blame them in the amateurs with whom most of the hit songs originate, while the real musical work is done by the arrangers. But just as the publisher does not let a misspelled word go out into the world, so it is inconceivable that, well advised by their experts, they publish amateur versions without checking them. The mistakes are either consciously produced by the experts or intentionally permitted to stand for the sake of the listeners. One could attribute to the publishers and experts the wish to ingratiate themselves with the listeners, composing as nonchalantly and informally as the dilettante trumps out of a hit song after hearing it. Such intrigues could be of the same stripe, even if considered psychologically different, as the incorrect spelling in many advertising slogans. But even if one wanted to exclude their acceptance as too far-fetched, the typographical errors could be understood. On the one hand, the infantile hearing demands sensually rich and full sonority. Sometimes represented by the luxuriant thirds, and it is precisely this demand in which the infantile musical language is in most brutal contradiction with the children's song. On the other hand, the infantile hearing always demands the most comfortable and fluent resolutions. The consequences of the rich sonority which correct treatment of voices would be so far from the standardized harmonic relations that the listeners would have to reject them as unnatural. The mistakes would then be bold strokes which reconcile the antagonisms of the infantile listener's consciousness. No less characteristic of the regressive musical language is the quotation. Its use ranges from the conscious quotation of folk and children's song by way of ambiguous and half-accidental allusions to completely latent similarities and associations. The tendency triumphs in the adaption of whole pieces from the classical stock or the operatic repertoire. The practice of quotation mirrors the ambivalence of the infantile listener's consciousness. The quotation are at once authoritarian and a parody. It is thus that a child imitates the teacher. The ambivalence of the retarded listeners has its most extreme expression in the fact that individuals not yet fully reified want to extricate themselves from the mechanism of musical reification to which they have been handed over, but that their revolts against fetishism only entangle them more deeply in it. Page 292. Whenever they attempt to break away from the passive status of compulsory consumers and activate themselves, they succumb to pseudo-activity. Types rise up from the mass of the retarded who differentiate themselves by pseudo-activity and nevertheless make the regression more strikingly visible. There are, first, the enthusiasts who write fan letters to radio stations and orchestras and, at well-managed chess festivals, produce their own enthusiasm as an advertisement for the wares they consume. They call themselves chitterbugs, as if they simultaneously wanted to affirm and mark their laws of individuality, their transformation into beetles rearing around in fascination. Their only excuse is that they term chitterbugs, like all those in the unreal edifice of film and jazz, is hammered into them by the entrepreneurs to make them think that they are on the inside. Their ecstasy is without content. That it happens that the music is listened to, this replaces the content itself. The ecstasy makes possession of its object by its own compulsive character. It is stylized like the ecstasy's savages go into in beating the war drums. It has convulsive aspects reminiscent of St. Vitus dance or the reflexes of mutilated animals. Passion itself seems to be produced by defects, but the ecstatic ritual betrays itself as pseudo-activity by the moment of mimicry. People do not dance or listen from sensuality, and sensuality is certainly not satisfied by listening, but the gesture of the sensual are imitated. An analogy is the representation of particular emotions in the film. Where there are psychonomic patterns for anxiety, longing, the erotic look for smiling, for the atomistic expressivio of debased music, the imitative assimilation to commodity models is intertwined with folkloristic customs of imitation. In jazz, the relation of such mimicry to the imitating individual himself is quite loose. Its medium is character, dance and music, copy stages of sexual